the United States versus Rosenblum. Ms. Pearson, you're doing double duty today.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Carl Brining. I'm an assistant federal public defender with the Central District of Illinois in Peoria. I represent Justin Rosenblum. Mr. Rosenblum takes this appeal from a sentence imposed under the mandatory life provision of 18 U.S. Code 3559E. I believe this is a case of first impression, and Mr. Rosenblum contends that 3559E was improperly applied to him, and he was improperly sentenced to life because his prior conviction for criminal sexual abuse is not a state sex felony for purposes of the mandatory life provision.
The statute that you quote clearly includes as a state sex offense for purposes of triggering the mandatory life provisions any offense under state law that consists of conduct which would be a federal sex offense if it occurred on federal property. Do you agree that if the aggravated criminal sexual abuse that occurred in the state felony case had occurred on federal property, it would be a federal sex offense?
There's a second line after the line you quoted from the statute that says, to the extent or in the manner specified in the applicable provision of this title. I don't think a prior conviction in state court that had no possibility of any federal basis ever having existed is enough to be a qualifier for the mandatory life provision.
But it's the same elements. If it had moved, as the district judge said, to the Rockford Arsenal as opposed to on non-federal property, the same elements would have been a federal crime.
Well, Mr. Rosenbaum's position and my position is that the statute requires that any prior solely state conviction does not qualify, because the statute requires that the elements listed be present, one of those elements. The statute does not list all felonies or all sex felonies. The statute gives specific, delineates specific crimes. It limits itself. When you look at Part A under 359E2, federal sex offense is defined, and it lists certain federal sex offenses that qualify. Under Part B of that section, state sex offense is defined, and it lists specific circumstances and specific locations where that would apply. When you limit a statute like that, and you look at the elements that they use to limit it, this was not a case where this had any federal jurisdictional basis whatsoever. That section that limits the statute does not specifically state that a felony occurring for a sex crime specifically in a state would qualify. It starts talking about Indian jurisdiction. It talks about federal lands, arsenal, things like that. To answer your question, yes, it probably would apply if it had occurred at the arsenal in Rock Island, but it didn't. And under this statute, it therefore does not qualify as a prior offense for purposes of the mandatory life provision.
Well, it seems to me that the language clearly contemplates conduct that was not a federal sex offense, but would be but for the jurisdictional limits. In other words, would be if it occurred on federal property. And the state felony conviction for aggravated criminal sexual abuse falls within that definition. So I've had a terribly hard time understanding your argument.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I go to that next line after that if, which is to the extent or in the manner specified in the applicable provisions of this title. Our argument is that the applicable provision of this title would be those paragraphs that follow. And therefore, a state offense, if it's to qualify as a prior for purposes of life, must fall into one of those provisions. It must have had the ability to have been, under the statute, involved interstate or foreign commerce or the use of the mails or the conduct occurred in any commonwealth, territory, or possession of the United States within the special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States in a federal prison. And it goes on with these specific categories. If it had been Congress's intent that this apply to all state felony sex crimes, Congress could certainly have said so. There are statutes, for example, the drug statute has something similar. 21 U.S. Code 841B1A says if any person commits a violation of this subparagraph after two or more prior convictions for a felony drug offense have become final, such person shall be sentenced to a mandatory term of life imprisonment. There you have a clear statement of what's required. They then define under 21 U.S.C. 802 the term felony drug offense. Another clear delineation of what's included and what's not. Term felony drug offense means any offense that's punishable by imprisonment for more than 1 year under any law of the United States or of a state. If this statute had said under the laws of any laws of the United States or of a state, there wouldn't be any question as to what the statute required.
Well, it doesn't mean anything then. Is that what you're saying? Has no meaning? Subsection B says the term state sex offense means an offense under state law that is punishable by more than 1 year and consists of conduct that would be a federal sex offense if and to the extent of the manner specified in the application of this title. And that goes on and lists those particular locations which would bring it under federal jurisdiction.
No, I think it has meaning.
What's the meaning then?
The meaning is that if there was a prior state conviction, that had a possibility for federal jurisdiction to have applied to it, then that would count. They list the ways that federal jurisdiction could have applied to it.
In other words, they prosecuted in state court even though it occurred on a federal enclave?
Well, actually, no, the federal enclave would be different, but something that's purely state, for example, Congress could very well have intended that somebody who could have been charged federally but instead was prosecuted only in state was receiving some kind of break by not being prosecuted in federal. That the federal prosecution was foregone, and therefore that person should qualify.
That's what I'm saying.
Whereas
if
somebody
you
else doesn't.
Had this kind of conduct and it happened in, on the arsenal, it doesn't make any sense, this language.
Well, if it happened on the arsenal, it would fit into one of these enclaves here.
Well,
it would be land controlled.
If it happened in the arsenal, there'd be another statute.
Let me. I think your argument's a very tough sell here, but even if it, if we were to accept it, couldn't the sentence still be life here as a permissive penalty, not mandatory?
In all candor with the court, according to what the judge said in the lower court, yes.
Yeah, but it looked like
likely
the judge
would
wanted to throw every book he had at this guy.
The difference in this case, I guess, and why, in part, this is brought, is this is a statute where a second offense, a person is going away for the rest of their life. So I think it bears looking at very closely. Even if you overturn this and sent it back
but
to the lower court judge.
What I'm saying is, you certainly would agree, don't you, that the judge could look at what he did here, say this is really terrible activity, and then look what you were convicted of in state court, and considering all that, I'm giving you a mandatory life sentence. I'm giving you a permissive life sentence. Could certainly have done that, and every indication I see looking at what Judge Mim said here is that that's what he was bound and determined to do.
And that could happen if this case were sent back for resentencing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Pearson.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Mr. Brining. Again, my name is Ellie Pearson, and I represent the United States. Your Honors, this is a case of statutory interpretation, and the defendant's argument is essentially asking the court to ignore the words would be and if in the statute. And his argument not only fails the plain reading of the statute, it fails the legislative intent of the statute and, frankly, fails common sense. As Your Honor clearly stated, if we ignore those words, then that section of the statute is meaningless. The defendant in this case is a child predator. He was convicted in both state and federal courts of aggravated sex assault on children, possession and production of sexually explicit materials involving child pornography. Congress specifically envisioned Mr. Rosenbaum, the defendant in this case, when they enacted the Two Strikes, You're Out Act. They wanted defendants like Mr. Rosenbaum to go to prison for the rest of their lives without the possibility of parole. The defendant asks you to consider the rule of lenity in this case in determining that if there's any ambiguity in the statute, it should be weighed in favor of the defendant. But the statute isn't ambiguous. Just because it has conditional language doesn't make it ambiguous. And from what I heard from oral argument today, it doesn't appear that they are continuing to argue that it is ambiguous. But I would ask the court to look at the legislative intent, which we cited in our brief, to help the court if the court has any question as to what the intent was. The statute was initially presented by Representative Mark Green of Wisconsin, and he clearly stated in the congressional hearings that the purpose of the statute is that if a person is arrested, charged, and convicted of one of the seven serious sex offenses listed in the statute.
We really don't care what a representative said in the House. We look at what the law is.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
And Judge Kaney read that section of the law, which seems fairly clear.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Regardless of what Mark Green, former congressman from my state, had to say.
Your Honor, I just point that out to the court if the court had any doubt that this statute was enacted to be encompassing conduct and not jurisdiction. It simply doesn't make any sense to do that. The defendant's argument that why didn't Congress simply say in any state law or any violation of any felony state offense like they did with the felony drug offense, I don't think has much relevance in this case, because I think that the states have a disparity in what they define as a felony sex offense, and Congress wanted to specifically avoid that issue and uniformly apply the statute to the conduct that they thought was the most serious and the most egregious. And with that, Your Honor, if the court doesn't have any more questions of me, I will return the remainder of my time to the court.
Thank you, Ms. Pearson. How much time? Yeah, 1 minute.
No one's saying that this wouldn't be a life sentence if it was sent back to the lower court. And I'm certainly not here defending Mr. Rosenbaum's conduct in any way. But the difference in this case is the difference between Mr. Rosenbaum being designated as a mandatory life person in prison for the rest of his life with no hope of ever seeing daylight again, no matter what, and having that hope, even though he would be certainly supervised for the rest of his life, which was also ordered at the time of sentencing. It's Mr. Rosenbaum's contention that the conviction at issue does not qualify because it could never have been brought in federal court. It wouldn't render the statute meaningless to rule in this way. It would just mean that state court convictions that never had any possibility of having a federal basis would not trigger the mandatory life provision. Unless there's any questions, I'll conclude.
Thanks, counsel.
Thank you.
Again, thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We move